Welcome to the Corlin Economics Report, a weekly look at financial and political topics relating to asset-based investing. Guests on this program pay no fees to appear, and guests and hosts disclose any equity interest in companies profiled. Now, the Corlin Economics Report.
Hey, everyone. Welcome in to the weekend edition of the KE Report. Corey Fleck here, joined with Shadmar Quits. We are leading you through this weekend edition as we are going to be focusing a bit on the metals and also on the markets again. And it was a wild ride, at least early on this week, for metals investors, precious metals investors especially, as we saw that almost flash crash on Sunday night. Shad and I are kicking off the show with Jesse Felder, founder and editor of the Felder Report. Now, Jesse, we're going to focus a bit on gold here because you write about gold fairly regularly. We've chatted about it, but there are a couple topics that I really want to get your insights on and really dive into here. Starting off with, look, the gold price, it's still up in the 1700s, about 1750 as we are recording this. But when you balance that out with real rates, so real interest rates, that's a balance between what the inflation data is telling us and where interest rates are, we're seeing negative rates. Real rates so low that we haven't really seen this too much, at least in the past decade. This should be one of the fundamental drivers for the gold price to move higher. However, I think you can make the argument that gold is maybe underperforming considering how low real rates are. Jesse, what's your takeaway from this?
Yeah, in my view, based on if you just look at the relationship between the real 30-year yield, and I'm just, you know, take the 30-year treasury yield less core CPI and, you know, the gold price year over year, gold should be over 3,000 an ounce right now based on where the real rate is. I mean, we're negative. Core CPI is, you know, 4% plus, and the 30-year yield is 2. So we're deeply, deeply negative, like we haven't seen really since the 1970s. And I think there's, you know, so gold is I mean, maybe 70-80% undervalued based on that relationship. Now, so it's important to recognize when something's not acting as it should, that's the market sending you a signal. And, you know, that, you know, there's something else potentially going on that we should be paying attention to. Now, my friend Tom McClellan just published a piece today on this very topic suggesting that the reason gold's not acting the way it should is that investors are worried about the Fed tightening, right? Typically, when you see negative rates to this degree, it's a clear sign that the Fed is behind the curve, and not just behind the curve, but like dramatically so. And so the Fed needs to taper and tighten, raise interest rates relatively quickly. And so I think, right, it makes sense to want to avoid precious metals in that environment and when the Fed turns hawkish. So, you know, that seems to make sense to me. Now, we're also in a situation that we've never seen before, though. I mean, it's kind of very something similar to what we've seen in the 70s, as I said, where the Fed should be tightening. But what's different this time is the Fed has said we're going to let inflation run hot. And I really do believe the Fed is in a situation where they can't tighten anywhere near to the degree that they need to. So look in the past, in order to actually have a tightening of monetary policy, you'd need to raise the Fed funds rate above the rate of inflation and, you know, core inflation right now. So you're talking about a Fed funds rate of 5%, roughly, you know, minimum to really start to tighten policy right now. But even, you know, if they were to raise Fed funds to 3 or 4%, that would crash the stock market. Look back at 2018. And the last time, you know, Fed funds was creeping up and the Fed was trying to address inflation, stock market cratered in the fourth quarter of 2018, and the Fed completely chickened out, reverse course, and had to get easy again. And even in, you know, 2019, start QE up again, as, you know, we saw problems in the repo market. So I don't think there's any way the Fed is going to tighten policy enough to really address inflation. They may begin to taper by the end of the year, early next year. I mean, they're printing, trillions of dollars on an annual basis. And so with inflation doing what it's doing, to be sitting at 0% interest rates, essentially have negative 450 basis points real rates at the short end is absolutely insane when we're seeing inflation rise to the degree that it's doing right now. So I do think at some point we're gonna hit an inflection point where people realize that the Fed is not going to be able to address inflation. They're not going to be able to taper completely, or they're not going to be able to raise interest rates, because the stock market's going to react. As soon as they start to taper or raise interest rates, stock market's going to tank. And at that point, the Fed's going to say, hey, are we willing to create a stock market crash and hence, you know, recession? And I just don't think they're willing to do that. They would rather have inflation run hot. And there's, you know, on top of all this, there's an incredible amount of political pressure to not go become too hawkish this early in a recovery, right? The fiscal authorities and the Fed have been heavily criticized for not doing enough coming out of the financial crisis to bring unemployment down and support the economy. And so they're going to go the opposite direction this time. We're going to do too much. If we're going to err on the side of anything, it's going to be to do too much fiscally, too much monetarily. And that's what we're seeing. And they're not going to reverse policy because they don't want to be criticized for not doing enough. So there's going to be an inflationary epiphany here sometime over the next few months where I think investors are going to realize inflation is not transitory. Fed's not going to do enough to rein it in. And I have to protect myself. And at that point, gold is going to reprice rapidly higher.
Yeah, Jesse, bring up some interesting points there, just simply because we have both the fiscal and monetary policies running wild. The talk of tapering and dialing back their bond purchases is still up in the air, whether the Fed's going to do that. And then the talk of tightening with them pushing it back so far, it's a very strange environment. We've had some generalist investors on that have made the case that for gold to really move higher, we'd need the Fed to finally cry uncle and admit that inflation is running hotter and start to hike rates. But when other central banks have tried that in other countries, they've kind of fallen on their face and had to reverse course. So do you think that if we did have that scenario where the Fed cried uncle and they were forced to hike rates and maybe it hurt the markets, as you alluded to, would that be what gold needs to really get off the mat and start moving again?
I don't think it even needs that. I don't think the Fed, it's going to take a lot, right? I mean, if you look back at the previous time we saw this type of inflationary cycle, And I do believe it's interesting to me when I hear people say, well, if inflation, you know, increases or appears in the future, and I'm like, what are you talking about, right? Inflation is already the highest we've seen in a generation, right? I mean, we're seeing core inflation and all of these measures, PPI, you know, came out today, levels we haven't seen in a long, long time, 10%, you know, on annualized rates here. So inflation is here. And the Fed is at 0% and printing over $1 trillion a year. That's the reality of monetary policy. They've probably never been this far behind the curve in history. So I don't think the Fed is going to be able to catch up. We're not. Jay Powell is the anti-Paul Volcker, right? Paul Volcker was the guy who said, okay, I'm going to create a recession. I'm going to create pain. I don't care what happens to the stock market. We have to get inflation under control. And Jay Powell said the opposite. Right. I don't care if we get inflation or any of these things. We need to solve wealth inequality. We need to bring unemployment down. We need to address the environment. And if inflation is the variable, you know, the cost to that, then we're going to have inflation. And so, he's not going to overnight go from being the anti-Paul Volcker to being the second coming of Paul Volcker. It's just not going to happen. There's too much political pressure, and the Fed will take way too much heat if they were to raise rates, cause a stock market crash, especially right now. I mean, one of the things I worry about is that we've just sucked retail into the markets, into risk assets, probably like we've never seen before, right? Through Robinhood and all these things. If the stock market were to go down 30, 40%, we would have significant social unrest. I mean, right, the Fed would take an unbelievable amount of blame for crashing the stock market. And we potentially see a political revolution in this country. And that may be where we're headed no matter what. But I do think right now the Fed sees that retail has gotten involved in the stock market to a degree we haven't seen maybe ever in this country. And if they were to do anything to hurt the stock market right now, it would create a recession. It would create a huge political backlash. The Fed would take all the blame. And I think they care far more about that right now than allowing inflation to continue to run hot.
So, Jesse, couple points, couple questions here on inflation. One being, well, the Fed is at least saying, still continuing to say that inflation is going to be transitory. Again, only time will either prove them right or wrong, but I want your thoughts on that whole transitory argument. And also, considering how much money the Fed is printing, isn't that leading to these higher inflation numbers in the sense that if they were to wind back policy, maybe inflation would come back with it?
Yeah, what's different this time, you know, so the transitory narrative is complete BS. What does transitory mean? We don't even have a definition for it. But if you look at the trend in core CPI, right, just for the past 5, 6, 7 years, right, we dipped down below trend briefly for the couple of months kind of, you know, in March, April or whatever of last year. But right now we've recovered that all those losses, we came back to trend, and now we're so far above the pre-COVID trend of inflation that transitory to me would mean we would pop up above the trend and then come fall back down to trend, right? And then we would just maintain the inflation trend that we've gotten used to over the last 5, 6 years. Where we're so far already above, we would have to have deflation for the next year or two just for core CPI to get back to trend right now. So we are literally, we've seen a trajectory, a paradigm shift in inflation, and it's right there on the chart for anybody to look at. So it's already beyond transitory. We've already blown that out of the water. So I think that, you know, the idea that it's going to be transitory is simply just a narrative to cover for the Fed being unable to address inflation. They just can't. And so I do think, you know, transitory is just a totally false narrative.
Now, Jesse, just following up on that question, the second part of that question, what about the Fed's printing so much money? Doesn't that lead to more inflation?
Absolutely. Well, you know, we're seeing, there were some, you know, shortages and things, which, you know, we had used car prices and a lot of things that in the CPI numbers over the last few months that probably are truly transitory. But when you're running, you know, when M2 is growing at 25% year over year, and what's really different this time is, you know, in 10 years ago when we were coming out of the financial crisis, the Fed was, you know, pedal to the metal, but the money wasn't really getting into the real economy because the banks weren't able to. The banks were in terrible shape and had to kind of repair their balance sheet, so they couldn't lend and do all these things. But what we've seen with fiscal policy this time is essentially acted, in my mind, like a debt jubilee. We put so much money in the pockets of consumers that they used all that to pay down their debts. It was essentially, like I said, a debt jubilee where we wiped out consumers' debts to a great degree. And they didn't have to pay rent, didn't have to pay mortgages, and then also got cash they used to pay down debts. And so now the banks are in great shape and consumers have a bunch more available credit. So we're seeing credit go, you know, through the roof. We're seeing that, you know, new auto loans and new credit cards and all these things, really new mortgages take off. Home equity lines of credit, things we haven't seen for a long time. That's all inflationary because that's money getting into the real economy, and the banks have a terrific amount of room to lend right now. And I think they're starting to do it in a big, big way. So, yeah, this time, all this money printing the Fed is doing is getting into the real economy. It wasn't 10 years ago, and that's why this time it is inflationary.
Yeah, Jesse, the big knock that we hear all the time and we see it in articles that come out in financial media is that, hey, look, you know, there was all this money printing after the great financial crisis, but it didn't lead to runaway inflation. But what the point that they always skip is there really wasn't that velocity of money and that circulation of money because it wasn't going to the people, wasn't going to the small businesses. It was going into financial institutions that juiced up the markets. This time around, over the last year or so, we've seen the payment protection plan, you know, bail out small businesses. We've seen checks to individuals, and we've seen that money start to circulate in society. And as you say, more lending going on and more loans going on. So you're actually creating real money, and that's creating real inflation and real velocity of money. So do you think there's a point of reckoning where people will realize that the CPI numbers really don't encapsulate it all? There's the hedonic adjustments, there's, you know, how they calculate the rent, and some of the mismatches there. But then there's real life where people go to the store, where they go to events, where they go to different things, and they see real inflation. Is there a point where people, even generalists, start to pick up that it's not transitory? And will that drive some generalist money into the precious metals?
Yeah, I think there's going to be a lot of generalist money. I think Americans generally are hugely underinvested in real assets and precious metals, hugely overinvested in risk assets and financial assets like stocks and bonds. But there's another really important difference to recognize between the current environment and 10 years ago, too, which is the stock market crashed in 2008 and 9, and that forced a lot of baby boomers to stay in the workforce. They said, I can't afford to retire, so I'm going to work well into my 70s. And that was increased labor supply, right, of people not retiring. Now, what we've seen is the Fed supported risk assets so dramatically this time that the markets came back. And now we're well above where we were in, you know, February of 2020. Prices have screamed higher, and all of these baby boomers can now afford to retire. So now we're seeing a huge surge in retirements, and that's a huge shock to labor supply, which is why, you know, we have, the Fed saying, okay, well, the amount of people in the labor force is shrinking. Yeah, well, you're finally enabling people to be able to retire. And so, you know, the labor market is so much tighter right now than I think they understand, or because we saw all these retirements, and it was, you know, the normal amount of retirements that should happen over the last 10 years, plus people feeling incredibly wealthy from what the stock market has done. And so, yeah, this is another big difference where we didn't really get wage inflation 10 years ago. Now we're really starting to see wage inflation, and we're actually seeing, I think the Fed just reported it today, that, wages up 3.7%, and, it's the highest since 2007, and that's only just starting. You look at, 10 million job openings, and there's not that many people, to fill those jobs. I think there's a million people short of filling all of those jobs. And so that's going to just mean wage inflation kicks in, which supports all this, consumer price inflation that we're seeing, and it becomes a virtuous cycle or a vicious cycle, depending on your view of it, of, higher prices and higher wages. And I think all that leads into the inflation psychology that is really crucial to seeing inflation take off. I think all of that is underway right now.
In all fairness, especially what's going on in the labor market with the older people retiring and opening up these jobs, even though it was forced by the pandemic, it's kind of what the Fed wanted, though. The Fed was waiting for higher inflation, and they did want the job market, at least in the top end, to free up. So the pandemic obviously has moved this along. But Jesse, back to the very start of this. Gold needs to go higher because inflation is running so much higher and interest rates are so low. I've read numerous articles that saying gold is not a good inflation hedge. At least look at the last decade plus. What's your answer to those?
Well, I'm a big fan of Mark Hulbert. I think he was the one who wrote the article in the Wall Street Journal. It came out on Sunday or Monday or something like that. I think he does some tremendous work, but I would there are a few things I would take issue with. The first thing I would point out, though, is that when you see these articles that are, just outright bearish on precious metals, they're usually most valuable as a sentiment indicator more than anything else. Think back to the Let's Be Honest About Gold, It's a Pet Rock article that Jason Zweig published in the Wall Street Journal in summer, I think it was August of 2015, a few months before the bottom. Gold prices were just over 1,000 an ounce. Was one of the best contrarian buy signals I've seen in my career. And I do think we this one that Mark published is just another one. Like my friend Peter Atwater likes to say, media reflects mood. And so these bearish articles are just a reflection of how bearish people are in the precious metals, which to me is just a terrific sign, because I believe we're in the middle of a bull market in precious metals. And this is exactly what bull markets do. They try and convince everybody to get out. And that's how, bull markets, climb a wall of worry. And these are the exact type of worries you need to create in gold bulls to set the stage for the next leg higher. Bloomberg had another article too about how it's just too hard to buy gold right now. Those are just very good contrarian signals. But a couple of things I would take issue with, Mark, is, you know, he pointed out stocks have performed better than gold prices since 1971. What he doesn't mention is that gold is about as undervalued as it's ever been relative to M3 in that period of time. So gold is really, really cheap relative to the money supply. The stock market is the most overvalued it's ever been in history at the same time. So he talks about this relative performance without talking about valuations. And to me, that's disingenuous. You can't look at 50 years worth of performance history and then just create your end date and not recognize that, okay, well, what did it take to create that stock market performance that's so good? It took the biggest bubble in history to create the highest valuations in history in the stock market. It also took a lot of bearish sentiment towards gold prices to prevent gold from not, like I said, being 3,000 an ounce today or higher. So I think those are a couple things, really kind of help that need to be involved in that discussion to really understand, okay, why has gold not performed as well? He also makes the point, too, that gold is expensive relative to CPI. And that implies, right, the underlying assumption there is that CPI is a good measure of inflation and that gold is not a better measure of inflation than CPI is. And I would argue that I would rather have a market-based measure of inflation like gold than a government-created one like CPI. And so and we know that CPI is not a perfect measure by any means of inflation. So to say gold is expensive relative to this government created measure of inflation is something that is in my mind not an effective way to kind of view the gold price. I'd rather view gold as a measure of inflation than any other kind of constructed mathematical measure. So I do think, you know, to come back to my first point, these articles are usually a better measure of investor sentiment than any other, you know, way they could be viewed or used.
All right, Jesse, let's wrap it up on this one comment is that, look, we even get the comments saying, I'm getting tired of these commentators saying gold's going to be 3,000, 5,000, 10,000 for years because we haven't gotten there. We've gotten to 2,100 and topped out and then corrected for over a year now. I realize that when the market wakes up, just a little flood of money could drive the gold price higher. But when's that going to happen, Jesse? People are getting a bit tired of that narrative, I guess.
Well, I love to hear that because that's exactly what I'm hearing from people, too, is the consternation right now among gold bulls is so thick you could cut it with a knife. And to me, that is just a terrific buy signal. I literally couldn't get a better buy signal than, you know, people emailing me and, you know, tweeting at me, hey, what the heck is going, you know, and coming up with conspiracy theories for why gold suppressed all this stuff. It to me, it's just a sign that it's a wonderful time to be a buyer of gold. To me, I'm always surprised how many people tell me, okay, well, maybe we should just sit out right now and wait for it to be a clearer signal to buy gold. And I always say to them, okay, well, if you want to wait for that, you're going to buy it. It's going to be $1,000 an ounce higher if you wait for that time. The time to buy it is when it feels the worst. And the time to, you know, be selling some and taking some money off the table is when everything is going right and it feels great. And so these are the types of things that I think you only learn through experience in the markets. But right now, I literally couldn't, you know, ask for a better bullish signal than this widespread consternation among precious metals aficionados.
All right, Jesse, great comments as always. Good chatting with you. I appreciate you taking the time to join us. I always enjoy reading over everything you write over at the Felder Report, which I will post a link to in that weekend show posting. Jesse, have a great rest of your weekend. Thanks again for your time.
Thanks, guys. Always a pleasure.
Al Corlin's firm, A.B. Corlin & Associates Incorporated, provides consulting services to public companies on matters of regulatory compliance. To find out more, follow the link from www.kereport.com. The Corlin Economics Report will be back after this brief timeout.